Anyway, I'm going to let you go, but I'll send that because you'll love it.
God, Sandra, what a wonderful call this evening. Thanks.
Okay, take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
Sandra calling from Sacramento.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! My gracious, but we have had a string of beautiful days here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West, by God, almost level West Virginia. High blue skies and big cotton ball clouds. Hot, hot, hot for this time of year in the mountains. Agnes and the kids are all there. This is the weekend when the annual Heritage Festival takes place in our little town. Agnes and the kids are downtown. There's a street dance scheduled for this evening. I'd kind of like to be there, but you know what? I can't resist being here. No. This is Friday on the front porch, and you don't just walk away from that. So while I'm back here in the Head On Radio Network sauna, the clock on the atomic clock on the wall that also happens to have a thermometer on it tells me that it is, 91.9 degrees in the studio. Woo! Y'all just mosey on up to the porch and grab one of them ice cold long neck things out of the zinc galvanized wash tub. You know, the one where all the, you can't see nothing but the bottle tops for all the ice and a little bit of rock salt to make it colder. Or pour yourself a cold sweet iced tea. Lemons are sliced on the side, should you prefer yours that way. Sit back, relax, because we, by God, are going to close the week with by conversalating. Lighten up a little bit. Relax. Have some fun. Funniest thing I've seen all day long, and I kid you not, comes via the best liberal columnist in the United States and one of the best in the world, Mark Morford, who offered today, our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent this along for my reading pleasure early this morning. I got up early so I could go and watch the U.S.-Slovenia soccer football match with a buddy of mine. Ferg and I went down and watched. There was fortunately, he doesn't have a lot of neighbors nearby, so the screaming was not too much for folks to handle because there was screaming. And some swearing late in the game, I might add. I got the Mark Morford column, 19 Reasons Why God Decided to Strike Big Butter Jesus with Lightning. And, you know, nothing starts your day quite like a really first-class giggle. And there were several of them. But the best line I have heretofore seen about the burning up of Big Butter Jesus in Monroe, Ohio, in front of the Solid Rock Church, which did not have a solid rock Jesus, else it would not be burnt up. Funniest thing I have seen said yet is the following. He is resin. He is resin. You know, when you're having your first cup of decaf in the morning and you read, he is resin. Be careful. Because you're liable to do a spit take on your computer monitor. Marty, come on. Go Slovenia. Please. I mean, we are underdogs. I mean, we might be able to blow the world up 600 million times over and have a defense budget that's larger in one fell swoop than the next 25 countries put together. But in the World Cup, we're underdogs. And we got, what's the official term? We was robbed today. We were. I'm going to start the program the way I did last night, because this ongoing, rather desperate fundraising drive that it has turned into didn't start out as a fundraising drive, but you guys turned it into one, has generated no few comments. And I like to share them with you because, among other things, they are a manifestation both of goodwill and of things that I would never have dreamed of saying about the horn myself. This coming in from Brandon. I heard just a sliver of your Tuesday night rebroadcast about your septic system problem. Actually, it was the BS legal crap that some nasty neighbor decided to throw at you. I heard you mention the septic problem some time ago. I know what the sinking feeling of a major and unexpected home repair expense can feel like. And I'm listening right now to last night's rebroadcast on the stream. Bob, we of the Horn family love you and your family. We care about the nightmare that you and your community are going through with mountaintop removal. That, along with trying to keep the Horn going, your septic system failure, and now this complaint. I can understand if it all feels like it's just too much. When I heard about this new development with the complaint, I immediately gave what I could. So I say to you this, prioritize. If you have to let the horn go dark, and I pray that it doesn't come to that, even if it's just for a temporary hiatus, then I say, save your home first. Without your home, there can be no horn. When I get paid again at the end of the month, I'll send more money. It is mind-boggling to me how right-wing media and Jesus hustlers can rake in barrels of dollars selling lies. But we on the left have to scratch and claw for crumbs to compete in the marketplace of ideas. But I can say this. Those high-powered corporations that pour millions of dollars into the Rushes and the Savages and the Hannitys out there have zero emotional investment in their message. It's all about protecting and promoting the corporate status quo. We on the left are bound together in blood and sweat and tears. We are bound together by a common belief that we care about our fellow human being. We care about human dignity. We simply care. I care. And so I will do what I can, as I can, how I can, when I can, for as long as I can. Signed, Brandon. Stunning. No, not stunning. Why should I be stunned at the goodwill of people on our side? We are the decent ones. We are the ones with functioning souls, if you will. Spirits, if that word is better. But certainly functioning morals, functioning consciences. We are not morally or ethically bankrupt as the right wing is. And while it would be a manifest expression of hubris on my part to say that you are manifesting it by helping us in this crisis, there is truth in it. There is truth. Thank you for those beautiful words, Brandon. Thank you. We on the left are bound together in blood, sweat,
and tears. We are bound together by a common belief that we care about our fellow human being. We care about human dignity. We simply care. I care. And so I will do what I can, as I can, how I can, when I can, for as long as I can. That has practically the elements of a creed, a manifesto. Now, this in from Tom in California. Just to let you know that the money is on its way, and my fingers are crossed that everyone else who listens will step up to help, too. But please, Bob, please don't lay off the fundraising. I know you find it distasteful, but far worse is you going off the air. I have noticed over the years that when you make the pitch every day, you do better for the month, and when you don't ask, they dry up. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tom, for sharing of your own, the fruits of your own labor. And thank you for understanding the icky feeling that crawls all over me whenever I have to, or whenever, well, the fact that we have to go hat in hand to keep this all going. But if y'all can tolerate me making it, I will make it. From Faith the Atheist. And this one just blew me away. I was just approved for a 0% interest for 1 year credit card. I cannot use it until I actually receive it, 2 weeks or less. I'm willing to charge a $600 donation on it if you can get your audience to contribute enough money to guarantee that my donation will not be for naught. I want you to stay on the air, on the internet. I'm not being altruistic, says Faith. Get folks to start sending in money fast. I promise I'll make that $600 contribution via the website when you hit $4,400. If I had $5,000, I would simply give it to you. But I live, survive, subsist. On a fixed income plus a little extra here and there. The show must be saved. Like I said, it is humbling. It is humbling. And it creates a sense of gratitude that I find not difficult to feel, but difficult to give appropriate words to express. And just to let you know where we stand, counting the stuff that's in the snail mail, we should be right at $3,000 about now. And that's more than I ever dreamed would happen when I told the story of where we were the other night. I'm humbled beyond belief. A note coming in saying, with a generous contribution saying, I'd give more, but I don't know what I'm going to have to do. I don't know what I'm going to have to pay on the bypass surgery. My God. My God. And there have been so many notes like that. Contributions, there's no such thing as a small one. They have all been magnificent, and they have all been stunning, and stirring, and humbling. And then I want to, and just to clear some stuff up, I got an email, and I asked for a pronunciation guide on the name, and I haven't gotten one back yet. The name is, I think, a Facebook handle. so I'm not going to butcher the name. But a query, and I think there's some important stuff in here. Bob, I hope you mentioned this on your program. Your callers seem to have passion but lack courage. It's good to call and voice your opinion, but that's all that happens. I find that you are a good host and even funny. Other than an echo box, what purpose does your program serve? The country is going in the direction it is because it is the will of the people. Don't get me wrong, I understand what's going on, but the battle was lost a long time ago. We should enjoy the time we have with our families and let nature take its course. I have noticed you are well-versed in history, so you should understand. Good luck to you, Bob. I love Sandra. Being as I'm from California, I can relate. South Central Los Angeles. I think there are several things in there that need to be addressed, and since it was asked that I read this on the air, and I have, I want to respond. And I want to respond fairly and accurately. No, I don't want to respond fairly. As Dennis reminded me the other day, fair is where fat hogs go to win ribbons. I just simply want to respond accurately. Your callers seem to have passion but lack courage. It's good to call and voice your opinion, but that's all that happens. That is an inaccurate statement. And it is an inaccurate statement born of, and I do not mean this as an insult, born of ignorance. Ignorance is the state of being without knowledge, without information. It is the state of being uninformed. Lack courage? Lack courage? Do tell. Lack courage. We have a dear friend in the Pacific Northwest. Her name is Jude. And for a number of times, uncountable, she has stood alone among hostels, bearing flowers and a pair of military boots. She stands silent, manifesting a form of courage that I doubt any right-winger has ever known. She has been accosted by people who disagree with her stand against the horrors and carnage of war. She has stood alone. Then there are my colleagues, my friends, my fellow community members, who have spoken up and stood up and refused to become statistics in a national nightmare as their homes were destroyed. They have done this as the opposition has beaten them and threatened to slit their throats, burn their houses, sabotage their automobiles. I call that courage. I call that bravery. And they are a part of this show. Far more people don't call this program than do. Do we have any idea what it takes to be in the deep south of this country, in South Carolina, or Alabama, or Tennessee, or Florida, or Georgia, or North Carolina, or Louisiana, or Mississippi, or Texas, or Oklahoma, all of which
are virulently hate-filled right-wing states. And yet we have listeners there who stand up every day in the face of violence, in the face of threats, and speak truth to power, and refuse to be silent. And that is courage. Your callers seem to have passion but lack courage. You do not know them, my friend. You do not know them. And if you've been listening for 2 years, you haven't listened to them carefully. You haven't known what they have done. It takes a lot of guts to be David from South Carolina and raise a liberal ruckus in the middle of a place like that. It takes guts beyond guts to be David in Tennessee. Matt Osborne in Northwest Alabama, the belly of the beast, who takes a microphone and a camera and sticks it in people's faces and goes to teabag rallies where those idiots carry guns? And we question courage? Rick Goodner in Texas. Doesn't get any more red state than Texas, does it? Rick Goodner does not hide his light under a bushel. He lets, well, you know the old hymn, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine, Lord, I'm going to let it shine. Rick Goodner ain't got no little light, he's got a great big one. To be from Central Ohio and speak out and proudly put your name on what you've written and called the right wing to account, you think that doesn't call for courage? Now, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm trying to be very, very clear about this. It takes courage to pick up a phone every day and dial a congressman's office, knowing that they already know who you are and why you're calling. It takes courage not to surrender. It takes courage not to give up. It takes courage to keep going when your job is already gone, thousands of miles across the sea. It takes courage to keep going when you live among the most virulently poisonous right-wing religious zealots, and still you stand up and say, it's bunk. It takes courage. The Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane is centered on all of this. How we define courage. It is centered on the question of courage, and I would tell you that based upon my experience, courage is not defined like you can say, well, that person has courage, or that person has brown hair, or that person has green eyes, or that person has black skin. Courage is defined in its moment. Courage is what we do when a whole bunch of what's inside us tells us that it would be easier to walk away. Courage is going to a peace vigil in 2010 when even the liberals seem to have forgotten these godforsaken wars that take place in our name, in our time, by our country. Courage. What is this show but an echo chamber? An echo box? What purpose does the program serve?
It is a little space in which we fold space. A little place where we draw distance together and make it meaningless and take good cheer and fellowship from one another to enable us for the next day's struggles. That is what this is. If this was an echo box, if this was an echo chamber, I would have left long ago. I have no interest in right-wingers on this program. I'll be damned if I'll give them any. Because they have 1,000 hours of their own every day. 1,000 hours for every hour of liberal talk. We should enjoy the time we have with our families and let nature take its course. Perhaps. Perhaps for you, but not for me. Because what did Tennyson say in Ulysses? I cannot rest from striving. And what did Shakespeare say? I will not hold my manhood cheap for having not participated in the struggle. To give up, to lie down, to quit, it's not in me. Maybe it's because of the kind of person I am or whence my forebears came. Or maybe it's just human nature that some of us would quit and sit and be done, while others of us find the struggle to be noble and ennobling and wearisome beyond words, but also energizing, also a calling to something greater than ourselves. To participate in the struggle is to honor those who struggled before us, who did not sit down in the dirt and weep and quit. That Marty saying, my reaction to your current response, hear, hear. You see, and I mean no disrespect to the writer. I do not. Because it can become disheartening. But I am versed in this, that, and the other thing. I can do, you know what, I know all kinds of books, but I don't know how to put in a septic system. Otherwise, I'd already be certified, and we wouldn't be having this problem. And while I'm not certified, I'm sure that many people would be willing to say that I'm certifiable. But knowing those things, and having read those words, and having seen the altogether prosaic leavings of human beings from thousands of years ago laying in the ground, and having tried for a moment or two to put myself into their shoes, I can't quit. If you read the opening passages of Thomas Wolfe's Look Homeward, Angel, you will find him describing and discussing how the narrator got to be where he is. And that's the thing. Each one of us alive on this planet, every one of us, whether we be starving in a jungle or freezing at a pole, every single human being alive on this planet is the very pinnacle and apex of every dream of every hope, of every yearning, of every human being who has gone before us. And we would say, screw it. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. I don't know. By my way of thinking, and maybe it's because I'm a crank, it is better to die on one's feet than to live on one's knees. And I am surrounded by courage. I am surrounded by courage. I am moved beyond my expression by the courage I witness. How much courage does it take for someone with no income to stand up against a multi-billion dollar industry like the coal industry and say, I haven't much, but what I have, you monstrous bastards, you will not take from me. How much courage is in that? How much courage does it take to leave one's home and travel 1,000 miles on nothing but one's own pocket and goodwill, and work day in and day out under the most heartbreaking circumstances, trying to make a change in 1, 2, 3, 4 people's lives? A coward cannot do that year in and year out on the Gulf Coast. A coward can't take time off work, paid time off work, and get on a plane and fly into the nightmare hell zone of the Haitian earthquake disaster and grit her teeth and do her work for no other reason than it must be done. It cannot be done without courage and persistence and persistence. Nothing can take the place of persistence. Sorry, but I felt like that needed to be addressed because they were legitimate questions, legitimately asked, and I hope I have given them some sort of viable answer. You want to get in on the conversation, jump in. It is Friday on the front porch, after all. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. An email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. We'll be right back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Back to me from prison. wait to see you come walking through that door. There's a girl standing by the band. She reminds me of you when I ask her to dance. As the drummer counts away, I take her hand. We move away.
Reminds me of something. The first thing I thought of when I saw courage, or an assertion of the lack thereof, the first thing when I saw that I thought of when I saw that was really Stephen Crane's Red Badge of Courage. But then I thought of something else. You know me, Shakespeare geek. It was 1599 when Shakespeare wrote the following. If we are marked to die, we are enough to do our country loss, and if to live, the fewer men, the greater share of honor. God's will, I pray thee, wish not one man more. By Jove, I am not covetous for gold, nor care I, who doth feed upon my cost. It yearns me not if men my garments wear, such outward things dwell not in my desires. But if it be a sin to covet honor, I am the most offending soul alive. I would not lose so great an honor as one man more, methinks, would share from me for the best hope I have. Do not wish one more. Rather proclaim it, that he which hath no stomach to this fight, let him depart. His passport shall be made, and crowns for convoy put into his purse. We would not be in that man's company, that fears his fellowship to die with us. For he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother, be he ne'er so vile this day, shall gentle his condition, and gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed that they were not here, and hold their manhoods cheap, whiles any speaks that fought with us. Slightly abridged, but still damned relevant. 20 minutes before the hour, and let's see what's shaking on the phones. By the way, we're going to have a lighthearted little moment later on, I promise you. Because all this, you know, I often think I would have been much better off living in an apartment somewhere where when the toilet stops up, you call the super and go away for a while. But that is not my lot, and that is not what I get to do. But you know what? Lucky for me, others have dealt with similar householding crises, and none more funnel, more humorously recalled than what I hope to share later in the evening. But to the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
I'm afraid I prefer Dylan Thomas.
Well, let's not do not go gently into that good night. It's overwork.
Yes, I know, but it's very, very appropriate. You got to admit. I'm sorry it is. That one line in that poem is very appropriate. May I rant for a little bit?
Rant gently into that good night.
Yes, gently. Here is a portrait of courage. My husband, who is in his 80s, has advanced to COPD. He also has 4 herniated discs in his back, which means every time he takes a step, he pays for that step in pain, acute pain. Several years ago, Walmart decided to move in. And among other things, we didn't like the way things were going in this town politically. Now, he knew from the beginning that he didn't have a snowball's chance of winning if he ran for mayor of this town. Because he didn't have the money, he didn't have the organization, whatever. But he felt that what he needed to do was bring these issues to the forefront because nobody was talking about them. So what he did was he got up with his bad lungs and his bad back and paid for at the price of every step. And he walked from one end of this town to the other, and a good portion of this town is in very steep hills, one end to the other, side to side. All over this town, he hit every house in this town, door to door. And he paid for that in pain, just so he could be defeated, because it wasn't the fact that he could win the election. He knew he wasn't going to win the election. It was the fact that he could go down swinging and therefore bring up the issues that needed to be brought up. Now that's courage.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. And perhaps it's all just a misperception. Perhaps I get heard clowning around and carrying on, and they think that this is just, you know, that's all there is.
And I gotta tell you, anybody, I'm not stupid. I can see the way the country is trending, the way I'm sure this guy has. The difference between us and him is, I much prefer to go down fighting. I may go down, but I'm going to, like...
Well, you're cranky Scots-Irish like me.
You bet your bippy. I'm going to take an honor guard because I want somebody to pay the bear dance fee. I am not going to just lay down and let them walk on me. To me, just sitting down and, accepting your lot is cowardice. Sorry, whoever you are, if you think I'm being insulting, but to me, it's cowardice. And I do everything I can within my physical limitations. And believe me, I'm one of those people, when the people in Washington, D.C. hear my voice on the phone, they say, "Oh, hi, Susan, how are you today?" They don't even have to hear me say my name is. I call them that much.
Activism takes many forms, Susan.
Yes. And, it's not a matter of, that's not to me.
I mean, and you know, it's one thing if we're...
Involved.
I'm sorry?
That's not bravery. That's just being involved.
But I say it takes a form of courage as well. Because it's awfully easy to just get the highlighter out and mark the next time that American Idol comes on and wait.
Oh, please, spare me.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about Donald, Susan. That's a very stirring story, and I appreciate you sharing it.
This is the man who he's fought in two wars for this country. He worked all his life, and then when he could no longer work because of his age, and because I told him, "You, my God, are gonna retire. You've had enough of this." He decided to run for mayor, and it wasn't because he thought he was going to win. He knew from the outset he couldn't win. But things needed to be said.
Because that's supposed to be the nature of how this works. And you see, that's the thing. That's my difference, I suppose, because there was an assertion made in this note. I understand what's going on, but the battle was lost a long time ago. No, it wasn't. It's only lost if you surrender, if we surrender.
Yeah, I keep...
And you know what? If you think the battle has been lost, you haven't seen anything yet. Because as much as we thought the bastards had the bit in their teeth during the 8 miserable years of the Bush administration... They haven't even begun to put into effect their real plans for us. I mean, my God, Susan, I've got a story here. You know, of course, who Eric Cantor is.
Oh, yes.
House Minority Whip. Well, it turns out that some folks went over his financial statements, you know, that politicians have to file. And lo and behold, it was the Wall Street Journal. Eric Cantor has about $15,000 as of 2009's financial disclosure statement. Eric Cantor has about $15,000 invested in an outfit called Pro Shares Trust Ultra Short 20 Plus Year Treasury ETF. Would you care to guess what Pro Shares Trust Ultra Short 20 Plus Year Treasury ETF does? They bet against long-term U.S. T-bills.
Why am I not...
The minority leader of the United States House of Representatives has $15,000 invested in a bet against the United States financial system. Now, this is not the show to tune into if you're wanting to hear somebody defend capitalism. The anarcho-randianism, for lack of a better term, because capitalism it isn't. But this is not where you go to hear that defended, because I won't. But if you are sitting there and wrapping yourself in the flag and beating on a Bible with all your worth, being a right-wing thug,
And
you are betting against the government that writes your damned paycheck every week?
Yeah.
Why does Eric Cantor hate America? Now, you know, they used to say that about us during the Bush administration when we'd say that we didn't support the war. Why do you hate America? And it was BS. But this is a guy, Susan, who is actively betting against the United States of America's future.
Yep.
Why does he hate America?
That's a good question. I'd like to find out. I do have one last thing about that guy who wrote him. The people who just laid down, that's happened all through history, and they've been forgotten. The people who went down fighting, let me see, they were in places like Masada. The pole of the Warsaw Ghetto, various and sundry.
The south of Italy,
like
Spartacus.
Yeah.
The members of the Spartacus rebellion were crucified every half mile from the Boot of Italy or all the way from the sole of the boot of Italy up the Appian Way to Rome. Marcus Licinius Crassus made sure of it.
They lost magnificently, and they have never, ever been forgotten. The people that conquered them have been.
Yeah.
And that says it all.
Because you know what? There's no safety in sitting down.
Yeah, no.
Now, if you want to talk about sitting down in terms of passive resistance.
Okay, now that's different.
That's different. Because you're still in the struggle. But you know what? If you just say, I'm going to go away and sit down in front of my tent and quit, then don't bitch when they ride in and slaughter you too.
There's a whole lot of difference between just sitting
anybody,
down,
anybody
and,
remember,
sitting down and lighting himself on fire.
Yeah, I was going to say, anybody remember Colonel Chivington? Rode in and slaughtered.
Knit snake life.
Yeah, slaughtered old men and women and children in a Native American encampment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, there's no, look, let's deal with it, Susan. There's no place to hide.
And
if you're in the mountains, you can think, man, if I could just get to the sea, but the seashore's been polluted. If you're at the seashore, you can say, oh, if only I could get to the mountains, but you know what? The mountains are being blown up.
Yeah.
There is not a stream in America with fish in it fit to eat.
Yeah, you may as well go down fighting.
Hear, hear. Susan, thank you for your thoughts. I appreciate them. And give my best to Donald, please.
The kids. Yeah, I will.
Take care.
I love Agnes and the kids.
Thanks. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Gonzo, greetings, Bob. What's going on?
Hey, what's happening, Spike?
Not much. Had a little interesting meeting with the Monroe County Democratic Party up here in Pennsylvania. Because I don't have any courage and I'm lazy, so I'm not involved. Other than I'm a smartass who wrote myself in, and by writing myself in once was enough to get the Democratic committee man position here in my district.
Sweet.
I should say.
Sweet.
Egged on in part to a House Republican Congressional Committee-supported write-in campaign. You didn't get to see me do that thing with my fingers for the quotation with that.
Yeah, what do they call that on comedy? The dick fingers? Yes.
Yeah, for the Republican state representative here who, especially when there's no one on the ballot for the Democratic side, runs a write-in campaign so that he can be on both tickets, to get the people who just vote straight party line to vote for him on election day. And by the way, a great cause of embarrassment, I believe, personally, for the AFL-CIO a few years ago, who gave him an endorsement because he was a Democrat on the ballot and didn't do their homework to realize that. He was just a Republican that took advantage of no opposition. Unfortunately, he's unopposed, and I knew I couldn't beat him in a write-in campaign because he'd get a few Democrats to foolishly vote for him. So I gave a fictitious write-in vote for Stringfellow Hawk, which was Jan Michael Vincent's character on the TV show Airwolf in the 80s. I wrote him in against the Republican.
Jan Michael Vincent?
Yeah, his character, not even Jan Michael Vincent himself.
Oh, my God.
His character. And I figured that would be a good one for someone to have to try to research and figure out who that was written in against Maria. The best part is on the way in the door, he hit me up. He's like, are you a Democrat or a Republican? I'm like, a Democrat. He's like, would you write me in? And it's raining, so we're kind of walking in during a hard rain. And I go, oh, don't worry. I've done a write-in plenty of times. I plan to do one right now, actually. He's like, oh, thank you. So instead I went in and wrote in a Jen Michael Vincent character against him and then myself, and here I am now suddenly involved in the local county party, which actually, best part of all, we have a new head to the county party here who was going to be a Kucinich delegate. So we have a real liberal running the county here. The person she was up against just kind of, when we voted on who to put in charge of the county party committee, the two gave presentations. She had a giant memo, post-it notes laying out a whole plan for dealing with local elections, especially dealing with my state representative district here, who's kind of gone unchallenged at this point. We need someone to go against them. And the other guy just kind of kept name-dropping that he worked with Clinton in the White House. Bill Clinton's his buddy, brought Bill Clinton here twice. And, learned the hard way, Bill Clinton's name, not as important as worrying about local elections. So that's who won here, at least for now. The left has kind of, the progressive wing of the party has a little bit more of a say in this party county-wise. So I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't come at this from some politically connected family or anything like that. It's just something you took on your yourself.
For the most part, my dad he was on his union board and a delegate within his union for a little while, but nothing that's serious. He quickly found defeat and never ran again. So that's about it. Yeah. No one really has ever held it. No one in my family has ever held a public office. Neither have I yet, but, I'm not a Kennedy. I'm not a Bush. Thank the Lord. And I would hope when it comes to firearms, I'm not a dick either. So, if only the show had a drum roll to follow that line.
Best I can do right now. Ferg took my keyboard.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's I hope maybe we can actually get something accomplished here. We have some terrible candidates to deal with, not on the Democratic side as much as on the other side in elections here in Pennsylvania. First, we have Tom Corbett, the guy who's wasting our tax dollars right now to make a cheap political ploy, suing over the health care plan, which is costing us money, and he's telling us he's fiscally conservative, which is just laughable when you look at what he's doing right now with tax dollars. And on the same, and someone cut from the same cloth is running for Congress here against our congressman, and it's Lou Barletta once again, the man who just race baits, and he's gone as far as when the police were trying to negotiate a contract, he told them if they agreed to not taking any sort of a raise and taking cuts in their health plans or whatever, their retirement plans, no one would get laid off. They agreed to it, and then guys got laid off anyways. They closed down a firehouse in the city of Hazleton under his watch because they didn't have money to keep running a large enough professional fire department to take care of the city of that size. And then he creates a law about the immigration policy that isn't worth the paper it's written on and cost the taxpayers of Hazleton a small fortune to defend it in court. So, and again, someone's saying they're, quote, fiscally conservative. And they campaign with money like there's no tomorrow, too, which you look at how they spend donors' money for campaigns. My God, one of the best ones, Pat Toomey, who basically had...
He had a freak paper.
He had an opponent on paper, but really he had no race in the primary. He was a slam dunk. He won by a mile. He ran a ton of TV ads during the primaries. Now, that's the ultimate waste of money. You're not going to influence your own primary campaign with all those ads you're running, especially when you're really focused in on not your opponent in the primary. You're just making a general statement against the other party. That's pretty wasteful. Almost as wasteful as taking someone to a faux lesbian S&M club in Southern California on the dollars of your donors. But if you follow where I'm going with this, they just love to waste money, much like when they thought by Nader being in the 2000 race that would ruin the election, when ultimately actually them rigging the vote in Florida ruined the election.
You really can't overestimate.
Gave a ton of money to the Nader campaign, which he just turned around and slammed them hardest with that money. I mean, talk about, again, wasting money.
Well, indeed, Spike. So, apart from all, how are you? I mean, I got an email from you the other day saying that you'd been kind of in a bit of a battle of your own. You want to share some of that?
I have to, for a few days, actually, not speak about that a little bit first. I have to speak to someone of...
Well, when I got your email, I didn't want you thinking that I was just blowing it off, but I had a sense that it might be better left unsaid until... I mean, I get a feeling about these things.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
but it's a damned interesting story. So when you can, I hope you'll share it.
Yeah, I certainly will with that. But
let me ask you. I mean,
other than that, I have a little time on my hands now. So
yeah,
doing garden work, some exciting stuff there. Trying to chase a skunk away from the house.
Real garden, like tomatoes and squash and onions and cucumbers and stuff?
Not so much the cucumbers and onions.
Well, it's a little late for onions now.
Yeah, lots of peppers and tomatoes, eggplant.
Oh.
They are Brussels sprouts. Just a bunch of stuff. Just, unfortunately, had a late start dealing with something else prior, but, then again, we kind of have short summers here, so we always are the last.
Well, you know, you're the only guy who calls the program and probably one of the, if not the only guy calling liberal radio programs who has his own sports show. Did you watch the World Cup match this morning?
Yeah, I did watch that actually. They finally replaced that the person I was filling in for on Sports Overnight. So. Someone else does it on a regular basis now, but I still occasionally end up on that show doing stuff too. But yeah, I did watch that game this morning actually. It was early for me, that was extremely early in the morning. I live more of the Hunter S. Thompson.
No, I know. I've got a vampire cape too. I understand.
So the 9 a.m. game to me felt like a 4 a.m. game to a normal person.
Oh, I thought it was Saturday all day long.
A little bit. But
If I get up in the morning to watch a sporting event, it better be Saturday. But it wasn't. You know, I learned the hard way. I just want somebody, my God, the one sport where it seems like maybe outside of baseball, where you could really benefit from some instant replay, and FIFA doesn't want that. There were at least three fouls, and I'm the non-soccer fan here, but even I can see him. One of our guys was being bear hugged by the Slovene. Another guy was getting it looked like WWF, and he was trying to put him in a sleeper hold. And we committed a foul. But you know what? I where my weird little mind goes. I can make anything political, even a bad call in World Cup. Because we should have had a win and 3 points in our little division. It just should have been. But I can make anything political. You know all these idiots running around, you know, whether it's G. Gordon Liddy saying, I don't want my kids learning to speak illegal alien. Or people complaining about learning languages and the world needs to learn to speak English. And oddly enough, these are the creeps who you know, we're going to give our driver's licenses in one language, and that's going to be English. Yeah? Well, oddly enough, this was one of those moments when expecting the rest of the world to speak English bit us in the ass. Because the referee, and you can see guys walking up to him going, what, who was the foul, what? And the referee just walks away. Well, you know why, Spike? Well, the referee was from Mali. And the principally spoken language in Mali is French. Not English. It's French.
It's damn French.
And so what happens is, if we had had an American side that maybe, you know, like, say, for instance, the Germans or most of the Europeans... grow up learning multiple languages so they can live in a multilingual world. One of our guys could have merely walked up to that ref and said, Pourquoi? Why? But no.
Well,
no, we're sitting there babbling away in English, and he just walks away like, you know, Helen Keller.
Well, he made a call like Helen Keller as well.
Whoa, so see, oh God, I love it when this happens. That was the setup, but you get the first, you're gonna get the night's first toaster for picking up that one and working.
I often reference famous blind people at sporting events, so very easy to set me up on that one.
I mean, if you've seen the Volkswagen commercials, you know that Stevie Wonder is better than that ref today. You know, Tracy Morgan. How do you do that?
So's Ray Charles, and he's not exactly with us anymore either. So, of course,
brings me back. I mentioned this to somebody the other day, and they didn't remember. I said, "Do you remember early in his presidency when there was some sort of honors concert at the Kennedy Center or whatever?"
And Ray Charles did "Your Cheatin' Heart."
I thought it was Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
Stevie, and the thing is, W was in the first row and waved. He waved at Stevie Wonder.
Oh, okay, that one. Because Ray Charles performed for him, and one of the first songs he busted out was "Your Cheatin' Heart," which was very appropriate for the crowd he was playing for.
Oh, my God.
It's as if he just sensed the right atmosphere. No,
we had a president for 8 years who waved at Stevie Wonder.
Well, those around him were quite the cheaters when it came to taxes and
elections,
law, yeah,
electronic voting machines,
invasions of countries on a false premises, all sorts of things. But yeah, I got to tell you, by the way, too, there were some people for SESDEC. They showed up at the meeting last night looking for volunteers. The SESDEC campaign out of the Allentown part of Pennsylvania is already being very aggressive.
Good.
So I think they're going to work extra hard. I honestly see there's already more going for SESDEC than for Toomey and his money. So that should be – I'm very, very hopeful and believe there's a good possibility that SESDEC, as long as he could punch hard when it counts the most down the stretch, he might have a decent chance in Pennsylvania to take the general, regardless of what some of these polls might be saying. Because these polls, I can just tell you, first of all the ones from Franklin, Marshall, Terry, Madonna are always going to favor the right-wing candidate. So Pat Toomey is always going to look good, Franklin, Marshall, polling. And for that matter, they are only calling traditional landlines. So people who either do voice over internet and they didn't take their number from a landline over, people who just use cell phones, they are all out of the loop on this polling data that comes out of Pennsylvania, and that's a lot of the younger voters. So,
well, I hope that bites them in the ass. I heard SESDEC earlier today saying that he's been in touch with the Obama White House and with Bill Clinton. And that Clinton has said that he is firmly behind him and will help him out, which, you know, I hope that's beneficial up there. Because, honest to God, it turns out that the American Conservative Union, or whatever that freaky organization is, ranks Toomey 10 points weirder, I mean more conservative, than... Rick, man on dog, play with the dead baby Santorum.
Yeah. Well,
and that means that means you're real weird.
You know, also Toomey is a he's rated A+ by the NRA, and as one of the original members of the Liberal Gun Club, I'm certainly glad to be going against him if he's that well loved by the NRA, which is one of the biggest sham organizations out there. The last thing they worry about are actual gun owners. It's like people who commute for a living joining the oil lobby industry. That's what the NRA essentially is. They're the gun makers. They're everyone but the actual consumers. The consumers are the least important people out there for them to represent. And the more danger they can bring into their lives, as long as it's profitable, the better. There are many, many things that scare me about Pat Toomey. His crazy ideology, many directions frighten me in many ways, and I certainly hope Mr. SESDEC can take him to town and maybe pounce on him a little bit in the election. I almost hope to see a similar result as when Bob Casey ran against Rick Santorum. Although I think in Sezdek's case, he can't be as cool and collective. He's going to have to be a little more aggressive with Toomey. Whereas for Casey, it was kind of a cakewalk for him in that he just remained himself, Mr. kind of monotone, mellow, always the same drone tone, versus Rick Santorum, who was really kind of becoming enraged that he was behind in the polls and couldn't keep a hold of himself in debates, really becoming emotional in the debates. And then Casey would just go, oh, as you can see, my opponent, he's losing control over himself because he knows he's going to lose. And he just would go on in the monotone like that, and it just really made Santorum look terrible down the stretch. I mean, that's why he did so poorly. I mean, when the debates were on our local television, we saw a cool, calm, collected Bob Casey versus a man who seemed to be a bit manic in Rick Santorum. It was almost like the Ed Muskie in Campaign Trail 72 with Harris Thompson. That's basically what we were starting to get at Rick Santorum down the end. He was really
melting down.
Yeah, he was really
before your very eyes.
That was one of my favorite defeats of all time in political history would be Rick Santorum to Bob Casey Jr. I mean, you couldn't get a more boring guy just creaming him than Bob Casey Jr. And best of all, because Bob Casey Jr., while he's the Catholic with the pro-life stance, although he doesn't make much noise about it, which is pretty useful, he took away the only card Santorum really had been able to play in Pennsylvania. So by having
the dead babies,
Santorum had no cards.
Yeah, the fetuses.
Yeah, I mean, right. He had nothing else to stand on at that point. That was his only agenda down that stretch. So,
well, I find that to be one of the more fascinating races in the country for 2010. It will be a magnificent thing if Joe Sestak can take down Toomey. Spike, it's good hearing from you. Get back with me when you're ready to tell that story.
All right, I certainly will. I definitely will.
All right. Keep going at him, brother.
Have a good one.
All right. Bye now. Calling from Pennsylvania, that's our buddy Spike. An email coming in from one of the Davids, David in South Carolina. He says, and this is just by way of telling his own personal story. He said, I lost a dear friend this week from a massive stroke. She was only 56 years old. This is what happens all too often here in the Bible Belt. This in a state with the highest incidence of stroke in the world. That's right. Not in the country, but in the world. A state where every single Republican candidate in the state is running on a pledge to opt out of Obama's socialist health care plan. When I fight, I also fight for those who hate me because they don't deserve to suffer either. And then David says, and understandably so, I'll contribute when I'm able. I just barely saved our home from foreclosure and spent every penny I could scrape together to save it. The bank refused to even take $200 less than the balance, which was inflated by $10,000 worth of fees and late charges and service charges and so forth. They kept raising the balance, and I was able to meet it each time. This in itself is a miracle. Having poured all my energy into this effort, I've been unable to generate much income. The power company cut off our power last week, over $100, and now have added a $400 deposit fee to the bill, which means I now have to come up with $515. But I've got a good neighbor, and I've got some good commercial-grade extension cords, so I have my guitars, laptop, my router, a fridge, and a couple of cheap fans. I know I'll get by, and I know we'll make it. Though I can't send money right now, I'm spreading the word about the show. I'm writing some new stuff, doing some serious reading. My friend's sudden passing shows me how precious life is and how precious our friends are. We're all in this together, and it's all going to be okay. Oh, and I still have a huge hole in the roof from the oak tree crashing through, too. These are the things that I know, that I read,
that I share. And these are the things that humble me. Whether it's a hole in the yard or a hole in the roof, we are all struggling, all of us, just to keep it all together. Jim writing in notes, and I think he sells himself short, realizing I may not be your most popular caller, I try to contribute as best I can with all the knowledge, skills, and abilities at my disposal and appreciate your latitude. In reference to my sometimes unusual sense of humor, that latitude, appreciated most by this writer is the vast spectrum of the contributions made by other callers that would otherwise be denied by the right-wing media. Be well and continue with your efforts to agree without being disagreeable. Thank you, Jim. Thank you. And let's see. I got to tell you, it's getting a little uncomfortable in here. 17 minutes past the hour. Thermometer on the wall reads 92.8 degrees. It's going up! See, this is real handy in the dead of winter because there are two big plate glass windows that are a southern exposure in the studio. In the warm weather months, it's a booger. But at any rate, I said I wanted to have a little fun this evening, and I do. Because the other night, after what was a very trying moment of telling you all about the little crisis we are dealing with here, I fell back on an old familiar friend. If I could have known him, I would like to have hoped we would have been friends. Maybe not. But since I know him only by his written word, he is an old and familiar friend. Mr. Samuel Langhorne Clemens, Sam to his pals, Mark Twain to the majority of the world. And I got to thinking about the trials and travails of home ownership, and it's not just mine, it's anybody's. If you own a home, you got problems. If you're homeless, you got bigger problems, but if you own a home and you got to do stuff on a shoestring, you got problems. And this is a little something that Sam Clemens wrote in 1870. It's called Political Economy. Political economy is the basis of all good government. The wisest men of all ages have brought to bear upon this subject the... Here I was interrupted and informed that a stranger wished to see me down at the door. I went and confronted him and asked to know his business, struggling all the time to keep a tight rein on my seething political economy ideas and not let them break away from me or get tangled in their harness. And privately I wished the stranger was in the bottom of the canal with a cargo of wheat on top of him. I was all in a fever, but he was cool. He said he was sorry to disturb me, but as he was passing, he noticed that I needed some lightning rods. I said, yes, go on. What about it? He said there was nothing about it in particular, nothing except that he would like to put them up for me. I am new to housekeeping, have been used to hotels and boarding houses all my life. Like anybody else of similar experience, I try to appear to strangers to be an old housekeeper. Consequently, I said in an offhand way that I had been intending... for some time to have six or eight lightning rods put up, but the stranger started, and looked inquiringly at me, but I was serene. I thought that if I chanced to make any mistakes, he would not catch me by my countenance. He said he would rather have my custom than any man's in town. I said, all right, and started off to wrestle with my great subject again, when he called me back and said it would be necessary to know how many points I wanted put up, what parts of the house I wanted them on, and what quality of rod I preferred. It was close quarters for a man not used to the exigencies of housekeeping, but I went through creditably, and he probably never suspected that I was a novice. I told him to put up 8 points,
and put them all on the roof and use the best quality of rod. He said he could furnish the plain article at 20 cents a foot, coppered 25 cents, zinc-plated spiral twist at 30 cents that would stop a streak of lightning any time, no matter where it was bound, and render its errand harmless and its further progress apocryphal. I said apocryphal was no slouch of a word emanating from the source it did, but philology aside, I liked the spiral twist and would take that brand. Then he said he could make 250 feet answer, but to do it right, and make the best job in town of it, and attract the admiration of the just and the unjust alike, and compel all parties to say they never saw a more symmetrical and hypothetical display of lightning rods since they were born, he supposed he really couldn't get along without 400, though he was not vindictive and trusted he was willing to try. I said go ahead and use 400 and make any kind of a job he pleased out of it, but please let me get back to my work. So I got rid of him at last, and now, after half an hour spent in getting my train of political economy thoughts coupled together again, I am ready to go on once more. Richest treasures of their genius, their experience of life, and their learning, the great lights of commercial jurisprudence, international confraternity, and biological deviation of all ages, all civilizations, and all nationalities, from Zoroaster down to Horace Greeley, have... And here I was interrupted again, and required to go down and confer further with that lightning rod man. I hurried off, boiling and surging with prodigious thoughts, wombed in words of such majesty that each one of them was in itself a straggling procession of syllables that might be 15 minutes passing a given point. And once more I confronted him. He, so calm and sweet. I, so hot and frenzied. He was standing in the contemplative attitude of the Colossus of Rhodes, with one foot on my infant tube rose and the other among my pansies, his hands on his hips, his hat brim tilted forward, one eye shut and the other gazing critically and admiringly in the direction of my principal chimney. He said, now there was a state of things to make a man be glad to be alive, and added, I leave it to you if you ever saw anything more deliriously picturesque than 8 lightning rods on one chimney. I said I had no present recollection of anything that transcended it. He said that in his opinion, nothing on earth but Niagara Falls was superior to it in the way of natural scenery. All that was needed now, he verily believed, to make my house a perfect balm to the eye, was to kind of touch up the other chimneys a little, and thus add to the generous coup de wheel a soothing uniformity of achievement which would allay the excitement naturally consequent upon the first coup d'etat. I asked him if he learned how to talk out of a book, and if I could borrow it anywhere. He smiled pleasantly and said his manner of speaking was not taught in books, and that nothing but familiarity with lightning could enable a man to handle his conversational style with impunity. He then figured up an estimate, and said that about 8 more rods scattered about my roof would about fix me right, and he guessed 500 feet of stuff would do it, and added that the first 8 had got a little the start of him, so to speak, and used up a mere trifle of material more than he had calculated on, 100 feet or along there. I said I was in a dreadful hurry, and I wished we could get this business permanently mapped out so that I could go on with my work. He said, I could have put up those 8 rods and marched off about my business. Some men would have done it, but no, I said to myself, this man is a stranger to me, and I will die before I'll wrong him. There ain't lightning rods enough on that house, and for one, I'll never stir out of my tracks till I've done as I would be done by, and told him so. Stranger, my duty is accomplished. If the recalcitrant and deflogistic messenger of heaven strikes your... There, now, there, I said, put on the other 8 and 500 feet of spiral twist. Do anything and everything you want to do, but calm your sufferings, and try to keep your feelings where you can reach them with the dictionary. Meanwhile, if we understand each other now, I will go to work again. I think I've been sitting here a full hour this time trying to get back to where I was when my train of thought was broken up by the last interruption, but I believe I've accomplished it at last and may venture to proceed again. Wrestled with this great subject, and the greatest among them have found it a worthy adversary, and one that always comes up fresh and smiling after every throw. The great Confucius said that he would rather be a profound political economist than chief of police,
Cicero frequently said that political economy was the grandest consummation that the human mind was capable of consuming. And even our own Greeley has said vaguely but forcibly that political... Here the lightning rod man sent up another call for me. I went down in a state of mind bordering on impatience. He said he would have rather died than interrupt me. But when he was employed to do a job, and that job was expected to be done in a clean workmanlike manner, and when it was finished and fatigue urged him to seek the rest and recreation he stood so much in need of, and he was about to do it, but looked up and saw at a glance that all the calculations had been a little out, and if a thunderstorm were to come up and that house, which he felt a personal interest in, stood there with nothing on earth to protect it but 16 lightning rods, "Let us have peace," I shrieked. "Put up 150. Put some on the kitchen. Put a dozen on the barn. Put a couple on the cow. Put one on the cook. Scatter them all over the persecuted place till it looks like a zinc-plated spiral-twisted silver-mounted canebrake. Move! Use up all the material you can get your hands on, and when you run out of lightning rods, put up ramrods, cam rods, stair rods, piston rods, anything that will pander to your dismal appetite for artificial scenery and bring respite to my raging brain and healing to my lacerated soul." Wholly unmoved, further than to smile sweetly, this iron being simply turned back his wristbands daintily and said he would now proceed to hump himself. Well, all that was nearly 3 hours ago. It is questionable whether I am calm enough yet to write on the noble theme of political economy, but I cannot resist the desire to try. For it is the one subject that is nearest to my heart and dearest to my brain of all this world's philosophy. The economy is heaven's best boon to man. When the loose but gifted Byron lay in his Venetian exile, he observed that if it could be granted to him to go back and live his misspent life over again, he would give his lucid and unintoxicated intervals to the composition not of frivolous rhymes, but of essays upon political economy. Washington loved this exquisite science. Such names as Baker, Beckwith, Judson, Smith are imperishably linked with it, and even Imperial Homer, in the 9th book of the Iliad, has said, "Fiat justitia, ruat coelum, post mortem unum antebellum, hic jacet hoc ex parte res, politicum economico est." The grandeur of these conceptions of the old poet, together with the felicity of the wording which clothes them, and the sublimity of the imagery whereby they are illustrated, have singled out that stanza and made it more celebrated than any that ever... Now, not a word out of you. Not a single word. Just state your bill and relapse into impenetrable silence forever and ever on these premises. $900, is that all? This check for the amount will be honored at any respectable bank in America. What is that multitude of people gathered in the street for? Looking at the lightning rods. Bless my life, did they never see any lightning rods before? Never saw such a stack of them on one establishment, did I understand you to say? I will step down and critically observe this popular ebullition of ignorance. 3 days later. We are all about worn out. For 24 hours, our bristling premises were the talk and wonder of the town. The theaters languished, for their happiest scenic inventions were tame and commonplace compared with my lightning rods. Our street was blocked night and day with spectators, and among them were many who came from the country to see it. It was a blessed relief on the second day when a thunderstorm came up and the lightning began to go for my house, as the historian Josephus quaintly phrases it. It cleared the gallery, so to speak. In 5 minutes, there was not a spectator within half a mile of my place. But all the high houses about that distance away were full, windows, roof, and all. And well, they might be, for all the falling stars and 4th of July fireworks of a generation put together and rained down simultaneously out of heaven in one brilliant shower upon one helpless roof would not have any advantage of the pyrotechnic display that was making my house so magnificently conspicuous in the general gloom of the storm. By actual count, The lightning struck at my establishment 764 times in 40 minutes, but tripped on one of those faithful rods every time and slid down the spiral twist and shot into the earth before it probably had time to be surprised at the way the thing was done. And through all that bombardment, only one patch of slates was ripped up. And that was because, for a single instant, the rods in the vicinity were transporting all the lightning they could possibly accommodate. Well, nothing was ever seen like it since the world began. For one whole day and night, not a member of my family stuck his head out of the window, but he got the hair snatched off it as smoothly as a billiard ball. And if the reader will believe me, not one of us ever dreamt of stirring abroad. But at last the awful siege came to an end, because there was absolutely no more electricity left in the clouds above us within grappling distance of my insatiable rods. Then I sallied forth and gathered daring workmen together, and not a bite or a nap did we take till the premises were utterly stripped of all their terrific armament, except just three rods on the house, one on the kitchen and one on the barn. And behold, these remain there even unto this day. And then, and not till then, the people ventured to use our street again. I will remark here in passing that during that fearful time I did not continue my essay upon political economy. I am not even yet settled enough in nerve and brain to resume it. To whom it may concern. Parties having need of 3,211 feet of best quality zinc-plated spiral twist lightning rod stuff and 1,631 silver-tipped points, all in tolerable repair and although much worn by use, still equal to any ordinary emergency, can hear of a bargain by addressing the publisher. Political Economy by a man who had a much better sense of humor about the crises of home ownership than perhaps ever I shall. About 26 minutes before the hour, we are halfway through the program. It remains a steady and balmy 92.8 degrees in the studio. This is why we don't have video yet. Because seeing me, I have no ambition to be a stripper doing liberal talk radio. And I have lost practically everything I had about me. It's bad. I am mopping my sodden brow. Ugh, like a televangelist in a camp meeting. So we're going to take a break. I think it's cooler outside than it is inside. But we'll come back. Your phone calls preferably. Remember, it is Friday on the front porch. Jump in. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolling into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. No echo box this. No, by God. This is something like no other. This is the horn. This is where those who fight come to recount their tales of heroism. I'm Bob. We'll be back.
They talk about the women too much. The women got so confused. They don't talk about their lives as such. My life is all I got to lose. They take it with a grain of salt. Laugh at the complexities. They're good at picking all the faults. I keep laughing till they all make me. Jesus, if I had to quit tonight, I'd never know if I was wrong or right. But that's just what you get. You
got to go the distance if you want to fight a good fight. Good fight, keep it up, keep the good fight. Good
first off. I can't believe she picked it up. She didn't know the good somehow. Then I hear her say hello. Panic in the gray room now. Jesus, if I had to quit tonight, she'd tell me whether I was wrong or right. That's just what you get. You got to go.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
My father explained to me that when a fella hit me, I couldn't hit him back because they'd say we were bad and savage. So I had to stand and be knocked all around. On the other hand, I have never separated my work as an artist from my work as a human being. I've always put it even more strongly that, to me, music is always a weapon. Music is always a weapon. Always, 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 always a weapon.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network. Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
People's Mixtape.
Premiering Saturday, June 26th, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, only on The Horn.
Shadow with a spear. control. The rhythm is inside me. The rhythm has my soul.
Oh, and Lord, isn't it the truth? 18 minutes before the hour, this is The Horn. I'm Bob. Friday on the Front Porch Edition, in the heat, without a doubt. Just a few things to share with you before we go back to the phones, and you know the number I already said a few minutes ago if you want to chime in. Well, you're welcome to. We won't do this again until Monday, you know. Juanita writing in. She said, when I first started listening to you and calling in, there was a while when I considered maybe I should not listen to you. Sometime maybe I'll tell you why. Now, Jim was calling in then, and one day something he said made me feel it would be okay to listen to you. I was so glad to hear Jim calling in again and tell him don't stop. He's a very interesting person with all his knowledge and experiences. Best of all, he's a cat lover. Right now I have many cats, from one little feral mama cat. I love them all. So many people who call in are so interesting and also wonderful folks. We can learn from each person with all their different life experiences, and we are held together by a common bond of believing that we, the people, are equal and deserving of any help we may need. I marvel at the compassion of the liberals and progressives in our audience. Me, I prefer the word liberal for one. It has been so slanderized. Juanita. And if you spend time with the program, you will find, as have most of the Horn family by now, that this is far from being something about me. This is far more something about us, all of us, and me least of all. This is something the likes of which I have never heard anywhere else, and the likes of which I have never experienced in my own right, save here. And as we talk about these funding issues and, you know, this sort of up against the wall, you redneck mothers kind of the moment that I am living here. Just by way of comparing, not criticizing, but comparing. I got a blast email a little bit ago from one of the sites that I subscribe to. And by mentioning this, I do not begrudge them a penny. But I want to point something out to you. This email I received said that it said, and this is a quote, "We must raise a little over $20,000 before we conclude our fundraising effort in order to make this month's budget." And that's because I assume that that organization pays people, as I hope someday to do with all the people who share of their time here with us. I don't tell you everything that goes on in the background, but the work goes without ceasing, trying to find some sort of long-term funding so I can stop with the pitching. But can you imagine a site that does nothing but text, no video, no audio, and nothing live, nothing at all live, and it costs them $20,000 a month. And I feel grievous on an average month for asking for the Horn to be supported to the tune of $2,000. And you are responding so magnificently to this immediate emergency and the immediate need for $5,000. And it slays me still that I even had to bring this to your attention. But you know what? When I read that it takes a text site $20,000 a month, I am left almost speechless by the goodwill and volunteerism of everyone associated with the Horn. Everyone mentioned,
and those sometimes unmentioned. It astonishes me. It humbles me. And it is no false humility. So, you know, that was just by way of giving you a sense of comparison with what is going on out there. They don't have half the bandwidth costs that we do. They have no live production costs. And they're $20,000 a month. Maybe that just shows that I'm a bad businessman. And you know what? I never said I was a good one. Jim writing in says, "Dear Juanita, thank you for your kind words. Your contributions deserve my sincerest gratitude and respect." Meow. Jim and the felines. Family. This sounds like family. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Where's that Quantum Leap base? I want to Quantum Leap into Al Gore and get him the heads up on Bob Kincaid and the horn. And we need infrastructure. If we did that and we went back in time 30 or 40 years ago, we'd be so set.
Yeah. You know what? We did that 30 years ago. There wouldn't be a need for me.
No.
We'd dominate the airwaves. You know, I mean, we would have.
There would always be a need for you, Bob.
Way back in the day. Because remember, we're setting the Sherman's setting the Wayback Machine for Get Media Right, damn it, for the left wing. Way back then, you know, back when, and this is one of those little moments that. See, I've got two things going for me,
mm-hmm.
And they may be trivia to some people, but they feel like little intersections with history to me, David.
Right.
Way back, every two weeks, and you know, you're a pop culture guy,
right?
You might recognize the name. Every 2 weeks, I got Sam Phillips's autograph. You know who Sam Phillips was?
Yeah, Sun Records.
Yeah. Elvis, those guys.
Mm-hmm.
He happened to own the radio station where I worked.
Ah.
And I got his autograph to the tune of minimum wage for however many hours a week, every 2 weeks. And a few years later, every 2 weeks, I would get Ted Turner's autograph every 2 weeks. And those are some pretty stunning people to have. That's pretty amazing to be able to sit and say. Unfortunately, I was crazy for the money, so I didn't frame any of the checks. If I'd had any sense, I would have at least Xeroxed a couple. But way back then, when Sam was looking at me and saying, "Son, you know, I think you could be big." If we had built that infrastructure like what you're talking about, David, I might have looked at him and said, "Well, Mr. Phillips, I kind of like talk radio." "Nah, son, you'll never go anywhere with that. That's already taken care of. The airwaves are owned by liberals. Advancing freedom and tolerance." "Well, okay, Mr. Phillips, what would you like for me to be?" "Well, we'd like for you to be the next Wolfman Jack." "Okay with me, Mr. Phillips." You know?
Yeah.
But that's exactly what you're talking about. This didn't, you know, this isn't an accident. This is not a boating accident. This didn't happen by, this happened by mistake. This happened, this hole that the liberal so-called left is in, happened as a function of the drop-dead ignorance of the so-called leadership on our side.
Mm.
And you can peg it to the day that Ronald Reagan killed the Fairness Doctrine, and then you can flash forward a few years to the day that Bill Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And therein lie the seeds of our own destruction. They didn't do it to us. At least in the case of the latter instance, we did it to ourselves.
I tend to agree with you, and the Facebook comment that you got reminded me of. I have no issues with what the person said because we all have those moments of. Emotional opinion, so I don't think anyone should take it personal at all. But if you do, I can understand. But I was listening to, I sent you a note yesterday, I don't know if you got it, but I was listening to the hearing for the Alvin Green, and I guess I can recap it for people who
do, please,
weren't there. One of the things that struck me as really, really sad was the fact of the lack of security that is still on ES&S machines. And one of the forensic researchers said that there was a mnemonic keypad of three of three numbers to enter the...
No, wait. What?
Yeah, there was... For to enter the system for the tabulator, for the ENS machines, for some reason, they all have a three-letter or three-number keypad. And here's the even more crazier thing.
You mean like the keypad outside of a Ford Crown Victoria to get in the door? That thing's got four.
That's what I said. So you get one number... And it actually lights up. So it knows that you, if you enter the three numbers, I've never heard of this crap before. So you enter one number, and it says, hey, you got it right. Now you need two more.
God, it's like tumblers clicking on an old safe.
And as he went in a little bit deeper, they talked about the flashcards. They talked about the calibration. And for those people who I'm sure you're aware of by now, the fate of this election is that Alvin Green is the candidate of choice. The court overruled from, like, I think the decision was 7-21 or something like that, maybe a little bit more on the other side. And one of the things that really just that puzzled me about it was the fact that the common deer in the headlights to ES&S, and even Tom Hartman was talking about it today on his radio program. And you know, Bob, one of the things he said really did send up a signal to me, and you can take it and do it with what you will. He said, what if this was just wasn't a fluke? What if it was a trial run? To see,
yes,
what the
yes.
Republicans.
Yeah, you're on it. You're on it. You're
to see
on
what
it.
The Democrats would do, to see their reaction, to see how far it would go, to see the outrage from the town, just to see, just to feel out the whole landscape of it all. The whole emotional behavior. What would be the reaction? Well, how would the news react? And it really struck me as. I've actually got in a debate with someone who is fairly intelligent on a different forum about this subject. And we're screwed, Bob, on so many levels because so many people still think this, think the crazy thing about it was one of the things
they still think the votes are getting counted. Is that what you're trying to say, David?
No. They literally think that this is. Even though you have scientists and mathematicians, they literally think this is like tinfoil hat 9/11 stuff. And if anyone, you're living in a bubble if you don't realize that this has literally been pegged, this has literally been pegged as tinfoil hat craziness, batshit craziness. They did it from the gate. Pretty much all of the credible and reputable people in the professional world won't touch this. One of the things that Hartman said today, and you'll find this interesting, he said that he literally has politicians who say to him when they get on the radio, we will not talk about the voting machines. You were not going to talk about the voting machines with me, right? We can't talk about the voting machines. And then when he would ask them why, he'd said because it shows a sense that the election has a lack of integrity to it. And they're worried that the voter turnout will be even a little bit more less than the last time.
Oh wow! So at a single stroke, without even a drop of rain falling, they've managed to diminish voter turnout less than what it already the pathetic level it already was. Well, that means that part of it means Republicans win.
I understand, and I wanted to talk about the story because. Brad Friedman has been doing a tremendous job.
Magnificent.
The story.
Yes.
And I really wish that if you could pencil in some time, that you would have him on the program.
I got to get Brad on to talk about these shenanigans. You're absolutely right, David.
And he'll talk. He'll give you the whole rundown. And Bob, another thing that really was really concerning to me was the fact that the central tabulators, all it would take is one particular poll worker to jury rig the whole district.
Well, as long as the little keys light up.
Yeah, as long.
I mean, am I oversimplifying?
No.
What is this, freaking Simon?
One of the things they said that was weird about the machines was the fact that you could actually, if you were actually just a worker on the street, or you were just a regular Joe public, and you decided to go in the election and you knew something about the voting machine, you could actually tamper with it. Because that's how much security lax we're talking about, people. You could actually pull back the curtain, and when this guy was testifying, he said you could pull back the curtain and you could literally change the votes on that machine. And I was like, wow. And it's worse than anyone can imagine. And that was one particular story that really got to me. The other story, Bob, is the this collapse of the seafloor business that people keep repeating. And the problem is it comes from a rumor of a rumor of a rumor of a rumor. And even Tom Harbin had to stop himself today. And I'm telling you something, people. You have to follow the whole chain of where this information comes from. Because the fact that people are putting this, Fire Dog Lake put this on their front page, and Tom Hartman was even stopped today in his radio program and said what they're showing. I guess Fire Dog Lake put a video cap of what they said was the seafloor, and it wasn't peer reviewed or anything like that. They just said this is the seafloor and there's oil leaking out of it. And then someone wrote in and said that is actually part of the rig that is on the ground of the seafloor. It's not the actual seafloor being leaked. And we're just having misinformation after misinformation after misinformation on this subject, and I think people need to understand.
But doesn't that inure to the general sense of let's remember who owns the media, and I'm not suggesting the same of Fire Dog Lake.
Yeah.
But I will say this much. There have been things that have happened with Fire Dog Lake, and I hope I'm not pissing anybody off. This is just my opinion.
Right.
There have been things that happened with Fire Dog Lake in the last few months that have caused me to call their credibility into question. I say that on my own hook and not as an official criticism coming from the horn. That's just my opinion.
Right.
But I think that the disinformation serves to catalyze, if you will.
Yeah.
The sense of futility and hopelessness in the culture. And by doing that, adds to the greater weight of a sense that, the Dick Cheneys and the Jim Inhofes are right. I don't know if you saw the Jim Inhofe's remarks today, David.
I did not see those.
Jim Inhofe, of course, you know to be a freak, right?
Yes.
I mean, this guy's been on a lifelong acid trip without the blotter. Okay, he's nuts, and he's not just crazy; he's mean crazy. You know, there's harmlessly crazy, and there's dangerous crazy. He's dangerous crazy.
Yeah.
And Jim Inhofe, in an interview last night with, come on, please, Newsmuck, said, "Remember the criticism George Bush got during Katrina? They said it was a lack of leadership. Let me tell you, that leadership looks pretty good right now. This is the first time he," meaning Obama, "this is the first time he's had a really tough test, and he flunked. It's not just me that's saying he's provided no leadership." And stuff like, we're all screwed, we're doomed, it's over. Wind the cat and put out the clock, contributes to that Jim Inhofe thing gaining ground. And fatalism is something that this country cannot afford right now. Now, I'm not saying that we all need to sing a chorus of, you know, you're the one who mentioned Annie the other night. The sun will come out tomorrow. No, we don't need to do that. We need to get serious about it. And we need serious facts and serious science. But the problem is we have a right-wing owned and controlled media complex whose last interest is in doing any of that, all the way down to Anderson Cooper and his goddamn Calliopes.
You know, the thing about it is that I heard this term on the Internet, and I love it. Sites like Fire Dog Lake, they are really, really addicted to selling what is referred to as a doomgasm. And, because basically what they...
Yeah, I get your point, David, and I'm sorry. I don't mean to walk right over the top of you, but you've kind of lit a little fire under me here.
Yeah.
You know, we're having doomgasm over what's going on. That's a great word, by the way.
Yeah.
We're having a doomgasm over what's going on in the Gulf. Well, you know, let me just go find some of those doomgasm ears and slap them a little bit, dumbasses. You want to have a doomgasm, you know, have it over what was happening. Because, as I've said before, the BP disaster didn't happen to a healthy planet.
You know,
I mean, does that make sense?
It does make sense, but you know, if someone's wondering why they do it, I can answer that for you. It's a dynamic of traffic and views. They want the most maximum traffic and views that they can get. When you put a picture of the BP Horizon disaster, and you literally say, without any fact checking or anything, this is a problem, Bob. I mean. To me, it's just insane, because if you want to be the next level of news, you have to be credible in what you report. And when you say the C4 is collapsing, I immediately say to you, where is your proof? Where is your proof? Give me your proof for it. Because otherwise, you're just mucking it up, and you're fear-mongering for your site, and you're trying to create more traffic views. And that's why they put it on the front page. That's why they put that video still there. And then they want everyone to comment and join in on this discussion. And then they can literally say in an update, I'm sorry to be cynical, but I believe this is how it works. And then they can say in an update, well, there's some doubt with this.
Yeah, but see, there's that damnable word again.
Yeah.
I believe for every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. Believe, 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 believe. I believe the seafloor is collapsing. I believe it's being pushed upward by a giant shrimp.
The pistol shrimp. He's
shooting his way out.
His mother is. She's pissed.
We are tormenting and torturing the planet in ways that we cannot even begin to express. There is no getting around that.
And the reason why I point this out is because it's important for people to understand this. The scientists who are trying to have a scientific and a logical, rational discussion, as soon as you put out, oh, my God, the seafloor is collapsing on your blog, on your news site, on whatever, without even fact-checking, I've seen where some of these sources are, Bob, and they come from wacky people, like on Op.
Alex Jones?
Yes, even worse than
oh,
that.
Oh, no.
You know, there's the abiotic crowd that doesn't believe that oil is...
Oh, my God, I haven't heard about that in a while. Yeah, the Earth is a big pimple, and it's just generating more zit oil.
But here's the amazing thing about it. That's where people listen. That's where all this crap is coming from. It's not coming from scientists. It's not coming from anyone reputable. It's coming from a lot of these abiotic op-ed freak peoples. And I've been looking, just going back... and checking back the record, where the hell is this all coming from? And then one of the guys on Op-Ed News, Chris Landau, he wrote about it. And he's trying to force his position, his agenda of what he believes is happening to the seafloor, his own doomgasm, so to speak. And that's where it's picked up, people. A lot of these op-eds.
And see, there's follow the money. Is there any, you know, in all of that upwardly bound traffic, is there money being made?
You know what? There might be.
Does that mean for more clicks down the side borders of the page?
Probably.
Because if it translates into that, it translates into money.
You know what, Bob? You're probably right. And here's the thing about it. This is why you should be concerned about it. It drowns out the scientists and the professors and the people who
just
are
like global warming denial does. Just like
right.
When
just
it snowed in Washington, D.C. In at the end of January, early February, the global warming, the global climate change, whatever, global goddamn catastrophe discussion was drowned out by the talking head bimbits and bimbers. Well, so much for our global warming. There's 12 inches of snow in Washington, D.C. Team news coverage continues right after this ad from BP.
One of these stories, and I want to bring this up to people because I think it's important. One of these stories is coming from a guy by the name of, or it's kind of like a secondhand type thing. I heard from my pastor, Lindsey Williams.
Oh!
See, that's where it's coming from. People, they just...
Hey, look, wait a minute. I heard from my pastor? Isn't that the same place where people heard Obama is a Muslim?
Exactly. And I don't trust that...
A Muslim Kenyan?
...pastor name with Lindsey because I think of Hal Lindsey. And when I think of that...
I think of Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
Just tap dancing there inside his little closet.
And so this is a problem because here's the other thing. A lot of these scientists and professors... A lot of these people don't check the internet and the blog sites. So when you have a site like Fire Dog Lake, and you have other news agencies like even Huffington Post and so forth, all these news wires that are tied to the, all these op-eds, a lot of these scientists, they can't come in and they can't refute these claims because they don't know what the hell's going on. And right now we have a bunch of people saying basically over and over again, the seafloor is going to collapse. The seafloor is going to collapse.
Okay, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Into what?
Literally what the theory is that they believe that the seafloor is going to collapse.
I mean, we don't have enough energy here to go neutron star or black hole or anything.
Yeah,
we just don't. I mean, sorry.
And what Chris Lando is saying, it could trigger a tsunami, and then it goes all the way back to his abiotic theory that... That oil is not fossil, the petroleum products are not fossil-based fuel, and all that shit. And what I'm saying is that all it does is create just more doomgasm orgies all across the internet, and we're not really having a discussion or a rational dialogue. And here's the other thing, people. We really do look stupid, and we look erratic when we actually just put these people and we just...
And right, and exactly, as Lottie is pointing out in the chat room, he said, actually, David, we don't need any more doomgasm than we already have in the Gulf. Isn't the amount of oil there already enough? How much more oil do we need?
But you see, that's the problem, because when you become desensitized to it, and when you have a story, this is why I understand. I understand a lot of these blogs and people want to bring back the traffic, and they want to have that dynamic peak of the day. I know, because I was in that world. Oh, we got to have the dynamic peak when I was blogging before. Oh, we got to have the dynamic peak. You got to have something. Put something on at 4 o'clock p.m., and he would study all the trends and shit. And I'd be like, Jesus, you're really into this. It's like, no, you don't understand the dynamic peak of the particular time. You have to put it at that. And lo and behold, he was right. You get the biggest traffic boost and stuff like that. And that's exactly what sites like FireDog, like Huffington Post, all of these sites to put it on, even like Raw Story, they all study that. And then they make an excuse.
Oh, there's an obvious science to it. But the thing is, it's the question of whether or not you're putting up reputable information. I mean, my God, had it not been for Huffington Post, I wouldn't have known about the tragic, the unfortunate sentence that Barack Obama used in his speech, because it was graded for someone at reading level 9.8.
Yeah.
Jesus, you know, but again, I go back to what Lottie said. Yeah, there's enough disaster already. I got one here that's just, you know, one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Because this doesn't have anything to do with collapsing seafloors or the little James Cameron ephemeral water beings emerging from the crust of the earth or any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is really boring and prosaic and freaking heartbreaking. Headline, BP blocks attempt to save endangered sea turtles from oil spill. And it's dated 2 days ago, and it reads as follows. A shrimp boat captain, must be Friday. A shrimp boat captain in Louisiana, hired by BP,
which, by the way, I was reminded by Gail last night, doesn't stand for British Petroleum. It stands for Beyond Petroleum. But a shrimp boat captain, and it's true, British Petroleum is a company now that is zeroed out, has zero assets, and nothing. It is nothing more than it's like the husk of a locust after the emerging time. There's nothing there. It's just a shell.
I think they supply the lubrication for the doomgasm, but keep continue.
You never stop working, do you? A shrimp boat captain in Louisiana hired by BP was blocked. Sit down, everybody, because I have a I just about cried the first time I read that. This is tough to swallow. A shrimp boat captain in Louisiana was hired by BP, was blocked from rescuing juvenile Kemp's Ridleys, which are sea turtles. Baby juvenile Kemp's Ridleys, little itty bitty, not the 500-year-old ones. These are the ones that hope to turn into 500-year-old ones in like the year 2500. Okay. Was blocked from rescuing juvenile Kemp's Ridleys that were covered in oil in the Gulf waters. He was captured on video saying that the turtles are being collected in the cleanup efforts and burned up like so much ocean debris with other marine life gathering along tide lines where oil also congregates. He witnessed BP workers burning turtles alive that had been caught in the oil booms. Rescue efforts are being ended tomorrow. So the Sea Turtle Restoration Project Gulf Director Carol Allen has responded saying the burning of boom and oil when even one sea turtle was seen in the water is a despicable crime. And Sea Turtle Restoration Project's Chris Pincetich has been in communication with both the reporter who shot the interview and the captain who witnessed the illegal killing of sea turtles, because it is illegal. And is making arrangements to ensure that sea turtle rescue efforts are not stopped and can be performed in areas with boomed oil.
Mm.
And it all emerged in a story in the L.A. Times called Death by Fire June 17th. It's despicable.
One last thing regarding this. Where do you fall on in the argument, because there has been discussion about picking up animals and cleaning them? Some people believe that you shouldn't do that.
But see, that's a lot like some people believe the seafloor is collapsing. I will gladly defer to reasonable and rational scientists, because one of the things that scares me is something that Kate pointed out in an email a couple of weeks back when she said, after you clean the birds, where the hell do you think they fly back to? The same thing that got him in the trouble in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the long run, you know, I still just, as a buddy of mine who's no longer with us on the planet used to say, screw justice, give me mercy. An exhibition of mercy is all that we can do now with innocent creatures that did not have cards in our game. So, yeah, that's an emotional response and not necessarily a rational or intellectual one, but at least I'm man enough to admit it.
Well, Bob, I've enjoyed this discussion, and I hope you have a fantastic weekend. And I look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, David, you take care.
All right, Bob.
Later. Bye now. Our pop culture correspondent, David, calling from Maine. And you know, I'm not trying to be I don't know necessarily what the science is here. And so I don't just want to gainsay it, but I'm pretty sure that the Earth isn't manufacturing any more oil, at least not on a constant basis like the abiotic crowd, and I had forgotten that word, says that we are. That the Earth is just one giant pimple, and every now and then we squeeze it somewhere and a zit busts and it happens to be petroleum. I can't do that. I can't do that. We don't know what the oil's what that well's going to do. We don't know, because everything has been obfuscated. Real science, as usual, you know, as is the case with just about every damn thing, real science gets taken out behind the barn and poleaxed. And that's the frustrating part of it. But I can't help pointing, whether it be dodgy voting in South Carolina or the Alex Jones pseudoscience in regard to the BP gusher, the BP Chernobyl. I can't help feeling, well, look, just ask anybody purveying this stuff, if they're making a buck off of it, whether it be Alex Jones or anybody else, if they're making a buck off of it, if they've got a book to sell you about it, be skeptical. Be skeptical. That's all I say. Be reality-based. How's that? Let's see. Let's go to the go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, Andy.
Andy, how are you?
Fine. How about yourself?
We've dropped to 92.1 degrees, but it's still a little toasty in here.
That's right. You're burning up. I'm getting a nice sea breeze because I live right by the ocean here. Got the windows wide open. Bet you that makes you feel good, huh?
Oh, yeah. Twist the knife, Andy. Twist the knife.
It can be pretty hot and muggy here, too, though. But I never told you this or the people on the horn, but I lost my job 3 months ago.
Oh, son of a gun.
Yeah, wasn't pleasant. And actually, I lived in Colorado for about 18 years, and I lived in California for 6 years. And in 3 weeks, I'll be heading back to California, jobless.
Oh, no.
Let's see what I can pick up there.
Oh, jeez.
But this is America. What a beautiful... I even got moved here to take the job 3 years ago.
Oh, holy cow.
And then they blew me out of here.
Did they make you train your replacement in China? Or India?
No, but you just mentioned it. I had to work with the Indians quite a bit. And that wasn't a pleasant experience either. You got the time difference. You got the communication problem where their English is different from our English. It just was not a pleasant experience. I would have so much rather had somebody next to me who was helping out, you know, more as an assistant. Because they were working, doing our number crunching. They were our assistants. And it really...
So we offshored the bean counting.
Yes. It really took away from the job considerably to have to interact with India. And then, you know, you get the normal backstabbing and infighting that goes on with who did what and who screwed up. And it makes it a lot harder when you're pointing a finger at people from India, too. Because, of course, they're the heroes. You know, they don't make mistakes.
Right. And they're the heroes of globalization, too.
You got it.
And that's not to suggest, Andy, that you know, that I hold them in any sort of disdain or dislike. Pawns is pawns is pawns. Whether the pawn happens to be on a square on the North American continent or on the Indian subcontinent.
Right.
A pawn is a pawn, and ain't nobody kings nor bishops.
Yeah, we used to actually talk about the globalization aspect of the job and so forth, and I'm sure if my calls were taped, it wouldn't have been too pleasant. But my Indian counterparts always agreed. They basically have the same feelings we do as well. You know, they don't want to be doing work for Americans or being told what to do by American companies. They want to have their own companies, period. You know, their own nationalism. They don't want to goof around with our economy. They got their own. So they don't like it either, I'm sure. But one reason I called that got me off is I think David, the individual from Maine, when he went talking about the election in South Carolina and the electronic machines and how the Democrats do not even want to touch that subject. I know Brad Friedman has a degree in computer science. That's why he's so good on this issue. And he knows what it takes, you know, to program these things and what you can do in computer software and how you can do all kind of manipulations, and you can make software and processes just go away, start up at a certain time, go away, just destroy themselves. I mean, there's so much you can do as a programmer to just screw the living hell out of electronic equipment. Anything that's programmed can be totally manipulated and totally hidden. And when you have no audit trail, no nothing in indelible ink.
Yeah, see,
this is total insanity.
Yeah, and this really, Andy, this is a thread that runs all the way, way, way back to, golly, Moses, you know, early 2004, when I was getting Brad Friedman on the program when I was still on the air in Beckley, and he told us the story of Clint Curtis.
Yeah.
Who was tasked to write a vote rigging routine software, you know, for right. Well, it's for double blind test purposes.
Yeah, some congressman in Florida.
Yeah, well, and a former speaker of the Florida State House and things like that, and you know, lo and behold, no, it was not for benign purposes. How about that?
I think Clint Curtis is running for office in District 5 in California, matter of fact.
Really? At one point he ran in Florida, so, okay.
It could be in Florida. I think I'm actually getting emails from him, you know, looking for campaign funding. Anyway. You know, another thing I noticed, I was listening back, and you did a great job in Washington, by the way. I mean, that was really informative, listening to, I love the economic stuff that...
You know, I feel like such an idiot when I talk to those guys, but I sit there hanging on every word, praying that I get one in three.
Right.
Because they made sense, Andy.
Right. Well, it's another thing too. It's our policies. As a matter of fact, I sent an email to a friend of mine in Germany today, and I just mentioned him. God, since Reagan, it has just been the policies in this country. The policies are just so wrong to crush the middle class. And you had one guy in particular who talked about the free trade policies and just what, you know, all the other economic policies that are just done to destroy manufacturing. And if it doesn't have the sound of a derivative and the sound of high finance, you know, it doesn't pass the smell test of these morons, our politicians, because, you know, the finance people are the ones that have backing up all the money in this country for campaign contracts.
Right, and that has in turn made our political structure deaf to just about everybody but them.
Right. Right. No, another thing, too, I noticed back a while back you had this thing you were talking about, Sestak, how he let the cat out of the bag about being offered another job not to run.
I've got a better idea on why that happened, though, now. While I'm sure I'm in terms of, you know, the worlds of really high mucky muck politics, I am a naive. Something about that just didn't ring right. And now but upon further reflection, it makes perfect sense because, the one thing he did with all of that is make sure that he put some space, the philosophic or political or whatever, he put some space between him and what was perceived to be the machine or machine politics of the Democratic Party in Pennsylvania. And that means something when you're trying to, you know, when you're dealing with a Pat Toomey.
Right.
And the teabaggers out there.
You ever listen, what is it, Meet the Press? Is that what David Gregory does?
Yes. Meet the Prestitutes? Yes.
Yeah, and he is a prostitute. There's no question about that, man. I have to listen to that because it's like almost.
Oh, anybody who gets on stage and dances with MC Rove, no, it's over for that guy for me. It's over. No credibility. I mean, do you remember when he did that? When he actually did shtick with Karl Rove on this, you know, that rap, I'm MC Rove. An art form developed by the black community.
Karl Rove should have his friggin' his keister, his big white keister should be sitting on a jail in jail somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, on the toilet bowl for the rest of his life. I mean, that's where that son of a bee should be. I shouldn't even be in public, should never be on the air, but this is the fascist country that we live in. But anyway, getting back to David Gregory, I heard him when they had Sestak after he won that election, he was on Meet the Press with Gregory, and Gregory just friggin' pummeled Sestak about that issue. This is where it came out. He kept on going. Did the White House offer you a job not to run? He must have done it 4 or 5 times. And you know how these son of a bitches are when they get a Democrat on there.
Oh,
Katie, bar the door. It's just let them
get the hot light. Yeah, get out the hot lights. Yeah, and the battery.
Right. It's lay back and let the guy just spew off his rhetoric, not question. Let him just do his campaign garbage. You know, the BS. But when it's a Democrat, man, they just pin him to the wall. And that's what he did to Sestak. He just would not let up. And Sestak kept on avoiding the question till finally he said, yes. You know, and that's when he just dug into him. But that's where that came from. That was that son of a B. Gregory that just let that rip because he just kept on pummeling Sestak until he...
Yeah, and it's not like the right wing doesn't have its own smear machine. It's the fact that the for-profit media wants to do their work for them. When 9 times out of 10, the likes of David Gregory are just reading their faxes in the morning as it is, or their blast emails. You know, we're out of the era of faxes now. But that's sickening. That's a complete abandonment of every principle under which a free press was conceived within the framework of the Bill of Rights.
Right. And it's a noxious thing that was done. It's noxious because it ruins kind of the Obama brand of him saying that it wasn't going to be politics as usual. And then you have the Republican himself is Rahm Emanuel, you know, Mr. Chicago, hardcore politics, you know, probably orchestrated.
See, I'm to the point now, Andy, that every time Rahm Emanuel's name is raised, a little bit of dinner comes up in the back of my throat.
Oh, he is pure vomit. There is no question. Anytime there's a progressive involved, you can be guaranteed Rahm Emanuel has the switchblade ready, and he will cut the progressive's throat at all costs.
For sport.
No question. That is exactly right. He will do everything he can to make sure that progressive doesn't have a leg to stand on. That is his M.O.
His job is
to destroy progressives in the Democratic Party. That is his job. No question.
And this is where I get into trouble with myself, Andy, because when I see that kind of conduct, and I understand that it's Washington D.C., and yes, I know politics is blood sport, but when you see that kind of stuff, it's hard to write it off to just being Johnny Cash conduct. You know, well, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. You know, yeah, okay. Even Rahm Emanuel, I can't imagine him throat-slitting liberals just to watch them flop on the ground. He's doing somebody's bidding, and I would like very much to know, Andy, who is that some or are those somebodies?
Well, you know, he made his money on Wall Street, and he was an investment banker. He worked for Wasserstein Perella. I think in 1 year he made $16 to $20 million just in 1 year alone. So he's closely connected to Wall Street and the quid pro quo that's all involved there.
And those are of course, the same clowns who have deafened our politics to anything except money monkeying,
right,
as you mentioned earlier. Maybe that's who's calling the shots.
So he's strongly connected to the big money center people in Wall Street and probably in Chicago as well, because those are the people that lifted him out, you know, of the upper middle class, wherever he came from, because they made him, you know, where he would never have to work again, and you could just do whatever you wanted with the rest of your life because of the money he collected as an investment banker. Anyway, I don't want to stay on very long. You got a lot of other people, but I just, the electronic voting machines, again, as a matter of fact, I have an advanced degree in computer science myself, and I know what you can do with machines, and I'll never get around it that the Democrats do not want to touch that issue, because they have lost more elections and they have cost, you know, people more super heartburn and probably lifelong PTSD and stress in this nation. And, you know, I don't think our nation is healthy, and I don't think our nation is healthy in a lot of ways, and people aren't healthy because of the politics and what we see happening and the pure corruption. I mean, having electronic voting machines, having a system, I don't care what they say, it doesn't work. You know, where I am here as well, we have electronic voting, and I've never used an electronic voting machine, and I always say, give me the paper, give me the paper. And, you know, I always get a hard, there's some, usually a Republican down there that will open his fat trap, and I usually get into some argument. But anyway, matter of fact, too, your call from PA said he ran for the committeeman position. I did that here as well. I tried to go against the machine, and I lost by I had 7 votes, and the winner had 19 votes for the local district committeeman position. But that's something definitely, if you're a progressive Democrat or DFA, man, that's something you got to do, because if you can get in there, you can, you know, tear things up. You can at least be a wrench in the system and try to have some influence. But, man, I tell people all the time to do that. If you can run, especially like, the guy said, I forget his name, in Pennsylvania.
Spike.
A lot of times nobody runs for those positions. And I saw in the northern part of the state where my mother showed me a ballot that she had, and it showed an empty space on there. All somebody had to do, a progressive had to do, was sign up. They were automatic because there was nobody else on the ballot. God, if you see those, do it, because you can throw a rank. You know, you could, you know, throw the wrench right in the DLC system if you can get in there. You know, the machine politics, which isn't bad. It is nasty. Because they don't want progressives participating, man. They want to keep it the way it is. And a lot at the lower level, there's a lot of corruption involved, because there's a lot of giving out money for contracts and development and all that kind of work, and, you know, bidding going on and choosing bids and where money's going to go. And, man, you can have an influence at those lower levels and then work your way up. Anyway, that was great of that. You're an individual from PA getting in the slot. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, that's the only way. That's the only way that you can turn. That's the only way that you can even begin to have a hope of turning things around.
And I keep complaining here about the electronic machines and the same thing. You know, no audit trail. Why don't you just throw your vote away, man?
I know. Well, see, that takes me back to a story that I told a couple of years ago about the day that I, you know, innocently. I'm hopelessly addicted to my Bluetooth earpiece because I just don't like holding that phone up against my head. It's just uncomfortable. I just don't like it. It's a lot easier to use the earpiece. So I'm going to go do early voting, and I walk in the door, and I've got my Bluetooth earpiece in, and you'd think I walked in the door with a bomb because all the little old ladies working in there, take that thing off. Get out of here. You can't be in here with that thing. Meanwhile, the voting area is sitting right next to the entire county radio dispatch apparatus. But my little Bluetooth is going to squirrel those multi-thousands of dollars voting machines. Wow. And it just made me come away from there going, you know, if you can squirrel it with those things have Bluetooth on them.
Well, I guess you, in some of those machines, you can actually use magnets and screw them up.
Jesus.
You bring a magnet in with you, and you know what you're doing. You can screw up the whole system and change all the votes, because it's all memory oriented, and you can use magnetic fields can screw things up in the memory.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Going back before you do go, Ron and Raleigh offering this. He said Rom's reasons for being what he is. And how he is, and throat-slitting liberals. He said, look no further than AIPAC for Rahm's reason for being anti-progressive. Progressive politicians tend to have a more realistic view of American foreign policy vis-a-vis Israel.
Right. Well, he's an ex-IDF soldier.
Yeah, and his daddy was in the Irgun.
Ship, I believe.
Yeah.
His father, I think, was a part of the Irgun.
Right, yeah.
Actually, he comes from a long line of strong Israel activists. And I know in,
yeah, but I don't even want to, and this makes me sound naive, so we'll just take my Pollyanna moment for what it is. I don't want to believe that. I don't want to believe that one individual's
political positions could be entirely dictated by the well-being of a foreign state, whether it be Israel, Saudi Arabia, you know, the Bushes, you know how they are with Saudi Arabia, or Slovenia.
Well, there is a point there, because most if you're a true progressive, I believe, you look at the Middle East situation in a much more objective manner, and you're not just a knee-jerk supporter of Israel like almost all the DLCers are. If you're a progressive like a Marcy Winograd, you have a totally different perspective. You are for returning the Palestinian land and having the Palestinians integrate with the country of Israel and have the same rights as an Israeli has. And that does not go over at all.
Oh.
With the Rama, well,
yeah, that's a baby. That's a baby Ruth right into the swimming pool.
Right, the world view of a neocon Israeli or the Likud, that does not fit the model. And Rahm Emanuel, it's been documented that in Arizona he took out progressive candidates. In California, a guy named Jerry McNerney, who's a congressman now, Emanuel tried to take out him with somebody in a primary before he got in.
Well, he was in charge of Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee monies,
right.
and there were great liberal candidates who had a chance of winning that he hung out to dry because he simply wouldn't let them have funding.
Right. In Florida, there was Buchanan Jefferson, or another race there. Jensen or something like that, but there was a progressive that he took out there because of the funding. He gave the funding to the DLC candidate and knocked out the progressive. And in Illinois, there was another one, too, where that woman was the ex-vet that had her legs blown off. She was a helicopter pilot. He brought her in to a race that a progressive already looked like she was going to get it, and brought this woman in late, and she took out the progressive. I mean, it's all over the country he's done this, where if he sees a progressive, he'll go in and he'll bring in a DLC.
Straight out of Bob Marley, you know, kill it before it grows.
And he'll fund them.
Wow.
And this is happens all over the country, things he's done like that. And that's why I'm sure, too, with the Blanche Lincoln stuff, man, he wanted to keep her in there.
But even Bill Halter can't. There's no way you can have called him some wild-eyed liberal.
Because he's right. He's not anywhere near a progressive or a Dennis Kucinich, or so not even in the same ballpark.
But he wasn't necessarily on the Walmart payroll yet, and that was the deciding factor down there. Andy, it's been a great conversation. My God, I hate it that you're facing a move that just bites. Please.
Doesn't it though? I don't know. I kind of look at it as an adventure.
Well, that's really all you can do. You know, it's from Shakespeare in Love. You know, how's it end? It all ends well. How's it happen? I don't know. It's a mystery.
Right.
And it's all a mystery.
I grew up here, and I decided when I was 18 years old I never wanted to live here. And because I happened to get a decent job offer, I came back, and boy, that was a mistake.
Well, God, please stay in touch. I know a move is like hell on earth.
Yeah, I'll be out of commission for a while. I'm sure.
But get back in contact as soon as you get settled down, please.
Right.
Andy, it's been a pleasure. Be well and take care.
Yeah, I love your show.
Thank you.
Keep cool, huh? Get an air conditioner in there.
I got one in here. It just that doesn't have enough force to do the job.
Not juice, huh?
Yeah, it can't handle the square footage.
All right. Have a great weekend.
Take care, Andy. Bye now. Andy calling from New Jersey. Hopefully we'll hear from him sometime in the near future, and he'll be Andy from California. I hope that goes well. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Jim.
How are you?
I'm well. Well, no, I'm hot.
I bet you are. And I just wanted to read an excerpt from a letter I wrote to Vice President Gore after his defeat, if I may. Just an excerpt.
Sure, okay? Sure.
Dear Mr. Vice President, politics is an eternal sea, taking from one shore and adding to another. In spite of the horror of the past election, I am certain that its waves will carry you and your ideals to a far better and more productive place, knowing fully well you will be honored as a far-seeing prophet in your own time.
And indeed he has been.
among those who are actually based, you know, who live in reality world.
Absolutely. Happy Father's Day, Bob.
Well, thank you, Jim. Thank you very kindly. I appreciate that. You take care.
God bless.
Bye now. It is Father's Day weekend. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. All of you. And granddads. And fathers-to-be. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
I was listening to the podcast from last night, and you had on something about Rush Limbaugh at the start. I just thought, I didn't listen to the entire thing, so I don't know if you brought it up, but he had a gay man down there playing music for him?
That would be correct. Elton John will play.
Did Robertson know that?
I don't think so, because Pat was busy giving out relationship advice that day.
You know, I mean, is Rush Limbaugh now felicitating gay men?
Well, my personal idea is that he's been doing that for a while, you know. I mean, after all, remember, he took a boys-only weekend, including an illicitly gotten bottle of Viagra with him, and it was guys-only to the Dominican Republic. Now, the Dominican Republic is known as being an absolute hot spot, so to speak, for tourists who like to go and have sex with little boys.
Oh, okay, then that would show why he didn't buy America and then go to Vegas, or go to Nevada, I guess, not Vegas itself, but outside of...
Yeah, I mean, the poor man's so closeted, it's not even funny.
I mean, when I'd heard that originally, my question was why he happened to be supporting, you know, given the fact of the right wing against illegal aliens, why he would be supporting foreigners against providing the funds to American workers.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes.
You know, it's just that kind of drift that you get on some things.
And one of those little head scratchers.
Yeah. Oh, and with the lack of an air conditioner, why not do what Rush would do if he couldn't get an air conditioner? Let's go back and bring in some half-naked ladies with those huge fans from those movies back in the 50s.
No, but see, Rush would bring in half-naked boys.
Rush has got a problem then.
Yeah, I have no compunction against being fanned like a pharaoh. Half the time my lovely wife thinks that I'm a reincarnated one anyway, because, you know, whenever she gets disgusted with me, would the pharaoh like me to peel him some grapes? Yeah, I know I should probably go hide in my room at that point and just not make any noise and be quiet.
Well, if she's talking to you as a pharaoh, you better watch out that Charlton Heston's ghost doesn't come around.
Get your hands off me, you dirty baboon. Yeah, okay. Now, the day that she starts doing that to me, I know that I'm in real trouble. 17 years, I haven't gotten the Charlton Heston impression yet, so I'm ahead of the game.
That works. But now have a good day then, and hope everything else is going well.
Thank you very much. It's going. It's back up to temperature's dropped to 91.2 in here, so it's getting better all the time.
Nice and warm out again. It's, the thing is that we've kind of lost spring. It goes from cold winter to summer.
Yeah, we didn't get spring either. It was rainy, 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 blazing, flipping hot.
Rainy, rainy, rainy in Iowa.
Oh, Iowa. Wow, okay.
Yeah, because the thing is that a couple of years ago, Iowa was headed back to becoming one of the Great Lakes.
I seem to recall that. That was when Rush Limbaugh said, look, There are no Negroes looting in the waters of Iowa. Wasn't that back then?
Probably.
Yeah.
But then again, there wasn't in Iowa. What is there to loot? I mean, it's not like it's New Orleans.
Coming from someone from Iowa, I will take you at your word. I would not dare say that on my own hook. There was a time when I badly wanted to attend the Iowa Writers' Workshop in Iowa City. I will remain silent on that.
Yeah, at one time I would have had nice things to say about Iowa City, but you can always get the Daily Iowan online and have the university's newspaper.
Well, I just figured that any writing program that would hire Kurt Vonnegut was somewhere I needed to be.
What was it? University newspaper. I knew a guy when I was in college up there took photos for him. And they were getting in trouble at the time with the attorney general of the state because they were using four-letter words in the paper. And state of Iowa was going to pass an obscenity law, but they had a problem with it, that if they printed it, the law itself would have been obscene.
Because they would have had to print the words that you can't say.
Yes, you would have had to arrest the attorney general.
Oh, that would have been a beautiful thing. Well, it's awfully good hearing from you.
Yes, and I ran into your program listening to something. They had they used to have Ed Schultz and Lionel on here locally, and they've gone to the place where this county voted 60% for Barack Obama, and the most liberal radio you've got on it is Coast to Coast AM.
Oh, wow.
And that's when Alex Jones shows up there.
Oh God! And a name, just a first name. So we'll be
Mike. Yeah. The thing is, Ed Schultz got replaced by Insanity, Sean Insanity.
I could do an hour. I could do an hour just explaining why that happens. But that's sickening. That's just sickening.
That's the thing. I mean, supply and demand capitalism. I'm for supply and demand capitalism. Except what it is you can demand all you want, and we're going to supply what we want.
Yeah, we'll supply. Trust us. If you don't have it, you don't need it.
Yeah, you know, when I grew up in this area, you had large UAW, AFSCME, and IAM contingents. I mean, back in 1980, they had a large group supporting Ted Kennedy running against Jimmy Carter here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you know, the thing was that. There's not room for one liberal talk show. I mean,
and you know what? That is
going to go against Rush Limbaugh. Go get somebody bad to go against Rush Limbaugh. But
have somebody.
Yeah, somebody.
But the thing is, Mike, the reason for that is that anybody doing liberal radio,
will beat them.
Will beat them and poses a threat, because that is the single largest confession that they make every day, and that is that they cannot compete for all of their capitalistic Randian hoo-ha. They cannot compete on a level playing field. They just can't.
Yep, and that's exactly how it is. I mean, the thing is that if you start putting out facts, the facts aren't with them. They had a guy write into the local newspaper here, and he had said that it's the progressives against the constitutional conservatives. And the progressives were created by Woodrow Wilson in 1929. This is the same Woodrow Wilson that died in 1925 or 20, maybe 21. He had a major stroke when he was president. His wife was essentially running the presidency during the end of his second term.
Absolutely, Edith.
Yeah, and the thing was that, you know, the progressives started with a Republican named Theodore Roosevelt.
let's don't remind him of that. But then again, sooner or later, Glenn Beck will get around, if he hasn't already, to comparing Theodore Roosevelt to Hitler. Yeah, the reductio ad Hitlerum. Is strong with that one. Mike, I got to roll along, but it's been good talking to you. Chime in any time, will you?
Okay, yeah, take care then.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, great to hear a new voice. And onward we go. No, we don't. One last thing. David in Tennessee sent me an ad, and God knows I have not been paid to run this thing, so don't, no. But this is a Jeep ad. The first new ad for the new 2011 Jeep Grand Cherokee. And he sent this along to me last night, and I watched it with sort of my little mouth hanging open. And I thought, Wow. They get it. Now, granted, the fact of the matter is this Jeep probably is not made in the United States. It's probably assembled here, but, you know, the parts are from elsewhere. But it's not about the thing. It's about the script. Listen, if you will. Listen. Listen to the script. Because this thing has meaning.
The things that make us Americans are the things we make. This has always been a nation of builders, craftsmen, men and women for whom straight stitches and clean welds were matters of personal pride. They made the skyscrapers and the cotton gins, Colt revolvers, Jeep 4x4s. These things make us who we are. As a people, we do well when we make good things and not so well when we don't. The good news is, this can be put right. We just have to do it. And so we did. This, our newest son, was imagined, drawn, carved, stamped, hewn, and forged here in America. It is well made, and it is designed to work. This was once a country where people made things, beautiful things. And so it is again. The new Jeep Grand Cherokee.
The things we make, make us. You know, for all of those globalists and people who believe that, you know, industry and making things, those are so passé. In the Obama administration, they need to sit down and watch that ad. Granted, it's an ad, and I'm not abandoning my belief in what the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, said about marketing and so forth. But there's something in that ad that speaks, and yes, I know about the ownership of Jeep and the whole dodgy business, but there's something in that ad that speaks to me and speaks to the need that we should at least pay attention to for workers' dignity. Because there is honor and dignity in work. And I don't know if there's so much honor and dignity in the work or the future that's being planned. We had a new study that came out just the other day that said in something like 20 years' time, or maybe by 2008, no, it's by 2018, 8 years' time, that half of the jobs in West Virginia will not require anything more than a high school diploma. Now, that is not a pay-on to the quality of the educational merit behind a high school diploma in West Virginia. That is a commentary on the direction West Virginia's economy is headed in. But it isn't just West Virginia. What kind of jobs are there that require nothing more than a high school education? Well, there's always the military. There are convenience stores. You can get into a certified nurse's assistant program without college. You can damn sure run a D9 Caterpillar dozer on a mountaintop removal site with a high school education or less. But a real manufacturing economy takes everybody. The people who know how to do with their hands and the people who know how to do more with their brains than their hands, and the people who know how to do both. And it's those in the middle that do both with mind and hand that we have let go by the wayside. On the other hand, I just got an email in from Amir who says, "Hey, Bob, these repuclican sons of bitches in northern Michigan want to have a power plant that creates energy by burning up the forest. They're trying to get it onto the ballot." These idiots have another planet to live on that I'm not aware of? But you see, you can probably work chopping down that forest with less than a high school education. And that's awful handy for creating a surf class, don't you think? Also coming in from Phase 5 in the chat room, Robert. Due for release in July. And he says someone has a sense of humor. More likely just a coincidence. No, I think it's more sense of humor. From 1965. Thank God it's only a motion picture. Crack in the world. As Robert notes, it's actually a very good science fiction movie. Drilling project goes wrong, crack develops in the earth, scientists drop nuke down volcano to stop crack from spreading. This just turns the spreading crack back in on itself. What will happen when the two ends meet? Cue dramatic music. I do believe that it is possible to screw with the earth enough that the earth screws back. Without a doubt. So that's how this week, this very, very difficult and yet inspiring week winds out. Thank you, everyone, for all of your help. If we keep at it, we will have this problem licked. And I'll be able to come on the air and say, we've reached $5,000 and we can stop. It would be nice if I could say that come Monday. Thanks to everyone who makes this program happen. Thanks to John Fox, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, to Peter Godbold. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our chat room moderator. Thanks to Gene and Susan, our news ninjas. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com, OSBORNEINK.com. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Takes a lot to make all of this go. A lot of amazing effort. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. We scored a win this week. Something called Nationwide Permit 21 has had the kibosh put on it for use in Appalachian coal fields and mountaintop removal operations. Hallelujah. Because that was the rubber stamp that the Army Corps of Engineers used to give the coal industry its way with whatever it cared to do in these, the oldest mountains on earth. It took brave people being threatened, their very lives threatened, at a public hearing in Charleston, West Virginia, last October, to point out the gravity of the situation. And that's why you hear me say that these are, in fact, the bravest, hardest working people I know. And they support this program, too. And always, happy Father's Day, everyone. Guys, fathers, granddads, happy Father's Day. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Yo, Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal.